When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, hey, where you been? Buckeye Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to your Thursday Buckeye Talk from Cleveland.com. Doug LaMaurice, Nathan Bear, Stephen Means. We're talking about missing folks and who might be missed next year the most off this current Ohio State football team and who the Buckeyes missed the most from last year's team. We're going to do a draft on this podcast, the Big Thursday Pod. And we're doing this because it's senior day on Saturday, the last home game for a bunch of guys. We always do a prediction post at Cleveland.com, the underclassmen that we think won't be back. Ohio State made it a little interesting with announcing some of the guys who are going to walk, run out of the tunnel on senior day. Nicholas Petit-Frere is going to run out of the tunnel, even though he's a fourth-year junior. So that's an indication. But there are other guys who aren't running out of the tunnel who might not be back. So we're going to go through that, a draft of who they would miss the most next year, of anybody who might leave. But we're going to start with just a little taste, a little appetizer, guys, of who they missed the most from last year's team. I sent it out to the texters. I sent 9 names. We're going to draft 6, and we'll dive right in. Steven, I'm giving you the first pick. Who do the Buckeyes miss the most from last year's football team?
I'm not going to take the guy that you guys are probably would have taken first. I'm going to take Pete Werner just because I understand what the case for Justin Fields is, but I just think the drop-off from what the production has been, from what Pete Werner was as a linebacker last year to what any of the linebackers have been consistently enough all year this year is much wider.
Well, that's not right. I mean, I understand what you're saying. If Justin Fields was on the team, would they have beaten Oregon?
I don't know. And that's what I asked myself. And I don't know. Because this defense was really bad at the start of the year. So I don't know.
So the question, and that went into my answer. The question is, would Pete Werner have been there, Noah Sewell in that game? Would he have been like a linebacker who sort of fixed everything by himself? I think he would have been the number 2 pick in this draft. Nathan, do you think there is a Pete? Do you think Pete Werner should be the number 1 pick here? Or do you think it's, of course, the quarterback?
I actually went back and forth several times between Fields and Werner because I agree with everything Steven just said. And I think if you put him on the field for that Oregon game, because the biggest problem in that Oregon game was just sort of a lack of discipline, a lack of experience, mm-hmm. and an uncertainty at the heart of that defense. And he solves all of those problems. However, I also wonder if you just put Justin Fields in that game with the same defense, they probably win. So I think either one of them are acceptable as a number one answer in this exercise. But I think maybe those are the only two acceptable number one answers. I think those are clearly the two guys who you'd have to pick.
Who do you think the coaches would pick? If you said Ryan Day, snap your fingers.
Justin Fields.
I think we obviously positional value is important. Really important here, and as important as a linebacker is to this defense, I agree with, I guess, the drop-off argument, right? There's no CJ Stroud in the linebacker core right now with the way people are playing. But I just think the upside of Justin remains at a different place. And as good as
CJ Stroud might win the Heisman. I mean, you know.
But what do you think Justin would be doing if he had Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, and Travion Henderson
with this offense and the complete understanding of the offense that he would have. You don't think Justin Fields would be still significantly better than CJ?
Honestly, I think they'd be the exact same thing. They'd just be the best offense in the country scoring 45 points a game, which to the point of...
With a win over Oregon?
I don't know. I'm not going to confidently say that they would have beaten Oregon. This defense was awful then.
Yeah, and CJ threw a pick like that ended their chances of winning the game at the end. I don't know, man. This is a tough... I mean, like, I get what you're saying. I think this is a bridge too far. And the other thing is they just came off a game where they scored 26 against Nebraska. And we're not 1,000% sure how everything's going to look when they get to Georgia. I'd rather have Justin Fields against Georgia, like third year Justin Fields against Georgia with a little more mobility and a little better deep ball thing. I mean, CJ's the leading Heisman candidate. If Justin Fields were here, the Heisman race would be over. People would be talking about they could vote for Justin Fields twice on their ballot. Like, there wouldn't even be a discussion. Justin Fields would be the Heisman winner if he were here right now. So if the point is the offense, they have the best offense in the country, what could Justin Fields do? I think he would add certainty to it. And I think he would, I mean, I think it will be more number one, whatever that means. And no matter how good Pete Werner is, I just don't know that he can make the same impact as a quarterback. Go ahead, Nathan.
I was to say, as it relates to the Oregon game in particular, that was also before Ohio State's running game had really clicked in. They hadn't committed to Trevin Henderson as a lead back. So it was okay, but a little bit more ordinary as far as their running production that game. But if you put Justin Fields in the backfield also, how does that sort of goose your running game for that matchup in particular? I think it changes so many things. So I think with that in mind, with who helps you avoid that one loss more, I think it probably still is Justin Fields.
If you, Steven, how would you characterize, try to, what, on a scale of 1 to 100, what would you make CJ this year? And what would you imagine year three starter Justin would be? Like, what, I'm trying to figure out how big you think the gap is or isn't between those two things.
A significant gap, because back to the CJ running thing, Justin probably just takes off in that Oregon game and just says, forget it, we can't run the ball, but I can run the ball and do whatever I want. I'm going to go win this game. So I do agree. I didn't look at this of who's the best player, because that's clear. Obviously, Justin Fields is the best player here. I more looked at it as what unit misses their player the most here. And as great as Justin Fields was, we kind of underrated Pete Werner his whole career, and he's kind of turning into Jordan Fuller a little bit in terms of, like, we didn't realize how good he was until he was gone.
You didn't answer my question. What would you give CJ and what would you give Justin? And then Nathan, you can do the same thing. I'm just trying to figure out what you think the gap is. Imaginary third year Justin versus real life CJ right now.
This offense is so good. Maybe Justin makes it 20% better just because he's running.
Yeah, Nathan, go ahead.
I mean, I was starting to say before, I'm not criticizing the way Steven looks at this, because I think the way he looks at this has merit. But the more I think about it, it's not production almost with Fields. I think Steven might be right as far as, like, yards and points being similar at the end of the day. I think it is the gravity that each player has on an opposing defense. Like, the way – the influence that – defending Justin Fields is different than trying to defend C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud's very efficient, staying in the pocket, making decisions, and Justin Fields is a different kind of athlete, different kind of player. And so it's almost hard to compare. I was asked this question last night. A Michigan State podcast was like, why would you compare this offense to last year with Justin Fields? I'm like, well – it's you almost can't, because those two guys are so different. And I think that Oregon would have had to defend Ohio State in a completely different way. Every team they've played would have had to defend Ohio State in a different way, because it's Justin Fields back there instead of CJ Stroud.
I do think if Justin Fields was here, he would break the record for the greatest Heisman victory edge. Like, I'm not even joking. I think he would be the most overwhelming Heisman winner ever if he was in college right now. Which might be an obvious thing to say, but that's the discussion we're having. And he has eligibility. He could be here. Same thing if Trevor Lawrence had decided to stay. Whatever, right? If they want to be Tim Duncan, play 4 years. Nobody does it. But if they had, that's where I think we would be. And in comparing a guy, you know, who's like starting in the NFL versus a guy who's a first-year starter in college, I just think Justin, listen, is Ohio State the favorite to win the national title right now? I would say they are not. Is that a fair assumption? I don't know what the betting lines are. They might be the second favorite. I think they probably are the second favorite. If they had Justin Fields, I think they would be the favorite to win it all.
I think there would be some really interesting discussions happening right now between, and probably, maybe they wouldn't even be. Maybe the discussion would be, yeah, well, Georgia's defense is pretty good, but they're not going to be able to stop Justin Fields and Ohio State, right? I think that might be what the discussion is right now.
Yeah, that's where I think they maybe would be. And that is not, like, that's not a criticism of CJ. That is just an acknowledgement of what if you had a third-year starting quarterback who's currently starting in the NFL and was a first-round pick and can throw it and run it and do everything and would have the entire offense at his disposal and be making checks at the line and be simpatico with Ryan Day and not having to learn anything. He would have already learned it. I just think the difference between any third-year starting quarterback and first-year starting quarterback would be great. All right. Steven takes Pete Werner. Nathan, who you taking number two?
I'll take Justin Fields.
All right, so now let's have the Pete Werner discussion, because I thought that's the order we were going to have the discussion in. Steven, you picked Pete Werner number one, and then I said, let's talk about Justin Fields. How would you describe the gap between if Pete Werner were playing linebacker for this team right now and what they're getting at linebacker right now?
I think this defense might be 25% better, honestly, because I don't think Muhammad Ibrahim has 160-plus yards in the first game. I don't think C.J. Verdell has 160-plus yards in the next game. And, I mean, we did a video about Kenneth Walker that's up on our YouTube channel right now. Go subscribe to that. Just type in Buckeye Talk on YouTube. You can find it. And we're all like, we're not really sure how this defense is going to play against the run game against Michigan State, because they haven't played a competent running back since week two. I think we would be all a little bit more comfortable, no, a lot more comfortable with what was going on out there if we felt like their starting linebackers were still Chambers and Pete Werner instead of still Chambers and Cody Simon, who might get there one day, but he's not quite ready yet.
I don't think it would be Steel Chambers and Pete Werner. I think Pete Werner would still be at will and somebody else would be playing Mike. I don't think it would be Steel Chambers. I think Steel Chambers might have worked his way into a bigger backup role, but I think that's just Pete Werner would be playing the will, right?
Yeah, well, but you're playing two inside linebackers, which are pretty interchangeable at times. I think they might. I don't know. Pete Werner would be what, a 4-year starter at that point, just for the sake of responsibility of making him be the guy who makes the checks and letting Steel Chambers just go run free. They might put him at Mike and put Steel at will, just because it's less responsibility, because you don't have to think as much.
That's what I think would have happened. I think if they would have started out with Werner at will and somebody at Mike, whether it was Taraja or Cody Simon or Tommy Eichenberger, whomever, and once they started to figure out that Steel Chambers then would be the second best linebacker to Pete Werner, you would find the way to get those two on the field, and Pete could play any position at this point. But Pete Werner is bottom line an overwhelming number. Overwhelmingly, these are the top two, we think, right? Go ahead, Nathan.
Yeah, I was just saying, but we don't need to get bogged down in this semantic argument, but I just wonder, you're just a little bit farther down on the depth chart now. Do you get the opportunity? Does Steel Chambers get the opportunity to show what he been able to show this year because he had the opportunity? I don't know. I would just remind people with Steel Chambers that, like, he's a great story, and what he's done for this team is important. But his Pro Football Focus grade for the year is a 70. So he's been solid. But he's not like – I don't think he's going to be like an first-team All Big Ten guy.
No.
Maybe All Big Ten at all. So that's what I'm saying. Pete Werner would be.
Probably. Yeah, it's just the fact that Steel Chambers is – given what you just said, he's still clearly their best linebacker this year because Taraja Mitchell's not very good and Cody Simon's too roller coaster right now. And Tommy Eichenberg's just not the athlete you need there.
But I do think the point that maybe we wouldn't have seen so much Steel Chambers because he and Pete are playing the same position, and so we never would have figured it out. But if they did eventually figure it out, if they had reached the point like, man, we need better linebacker play, could we move Pete to the mic and see what Steel could do? I think we might have gotten there. We maybe would have gotten there a little more slowly than we did. I do think, but if we think right now that Ryan Day thinks Steel Chambers is their best linebacker. Mm-hmm. So then Steel Chambers would be their second best linebacker behind Pete Werner. But to your point, Nathan, they might not have figured it out, or they might have figured it out a different way, because Pete would be the guy running around and attacking stuff. All right. On our texters, 614-350-3315, you get to participate in stuff like this. Justin Fields, actually pretty close with Pete Werner, closer than I would have imagined. Justin Fields, 2.52, which again, there's nine people to rank. If you're the overwhelming number one choice, you're a 1.0, he's 2.5. I mean, like, I already made my point about Justin Fields.
You're not wrong. It's just like the case for
what people are doing. So, I mean, like, the linebackers have not played well. Like, in terms of gap, I get what you're saying, but it's like, can I have Justin Fields back from the NFL? Yes, please. Let's do it right now. Pete Werner second at 3.13. I'm about to take the guy third that finished ninth, that finished last of the people that I put out there. And I understand why people did it this way, but I'm thinking gap. And it's one of those things. If you just think the offense is perfect, well, why do we need to change anything on the offense? They have everything they want. So then we're only going to take defensive guys. I guess they're number, okay, so they're number one ranked offense in the country. I'm still going to take an offensive guy because I think there's a drop-off here. I'm taking Luke Farrell because they cannot do the 12 personnel stuff like they did last year, because there's a gap between Luke Farrell and Cade Stover. Cade Stover is just not there as a complete blocker, as a pass threat at all. This isn't anything about Jeremy Ruckert, but I loved Farrell and Ruckert as a combo, and Ruckert and Stover as a combo just is not the same to me. And so there's a lot of other guys that you could pick here, but Farrell finished last. But Nathan, you're kind of nodding in agreement here. Again, if we're talking drop-off, Luke Farrell did everything they wanted a tight end to do. And that meant last year they had two tight ends that did everything they wanted a tight end to do, and they played them together a lot. I think this year they have one of those guys, and it's a difference.
Yeah, it's just a comparison between the guys Ohio State has right now behind Ruckert, I think, are doing a fine job. I think they've been
good. They're fine, yeah.
And I think Luke Farrell would be excellent, at least, especially in a secondary, you know, in the 1B role or the number two role, however you want to call it. And I think that's where you start looking for those comparisons, because you're right, the offense is doing what it's doing, but just imagine what it does with Luke Farrell back in it. Like, again, it's more like, I don't think opponents have to respect Stover and Rossi yet the way that they would have to respect Farrell in any defensive game plan. And anytime you want to just go one tight end, now it's Farrell that's in there as the one tight end, instead of if you need to give Ruckert a break, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whereas right now, if you want to go one tight end and take Ruckert out for rest or whatever, that's where the big drop, I think, happens. It's more the single tight end looks where you don't have Ruckert in the game than what you're getting out of the two tight end looks almost.
Right. I mean, they're playing a walk-on. They're giving a walk-on snaps. They're giving Mitch Rossi snaps in part because they're trying to patch together that second tight end spot.
I get it. You know, they can't do as much 12 personnel. Oh, well, so, we're just going to play these three wide receivers.
No, I wouldn't change the offense. What's the point of changing anything on offense? Because they have the best offense in the country.
It's more like last year that was so valuable, but also like they had to play more 12 personnel because there was a drop off with the third receiver. And so it's keep Garrett and Chris on the field at all times, and we're going to play our best weapons. And their best weapons were those two, and then the next two guys were their two tight ends. I don't think and that's fine. It worked for that team. They had one of the better offenses in the country. This personnel works for what they want to do this year, and that's have three wide receivers on the field, occasionally do some 12 personnel. But listen, they started off the season doing a lot of that, 12 personnel in the middle of the field and play action deep shots. They don't do it as often anymore, and it's just as effective. So I don't, from a talent standpoint, sure, they probably miss him, but like on the field, I think they're fine without him. They just don't have to do that stuff that much.
Well, we say they didn't have production from the third receiver last year, but it turns out that third receiver was pretty good. He didn't produce, and they also didn't play him as much in part because they had the 12. I'm not saying they'd be taking Jackson Smith and Jigba off the field all the time, but there is, I mean, to your point, why did they use 12 personnel last year? Well, it's because their receivers weren't as good or their tight ends were better. I think it's both. And I think this year their receivers are better and their tight ends aren't as good. But if their tight ends were as good, I think they would do it more. And maybe it wouldn't be that the three receivers were on the field all the time. And again, I mean, we're trying to win a national title here with these picks. I get it. It doesn't matter if we're going to play. Well, it worked against Purdue. It's like, I know. Give me a red zone. Give me red zone offense against Georgia in the national title game on third and goal from the four. I might want Luke Farrell in on that play. And I think Luke Farrell, compared to what they have now, that might be the personnel look you want. That might be – they're going to put Mitch Rossi in the red zone in the national title game. I'd rather have Luke Farrell. I mean, for real, that's going to happen. And that's happening because there's a drop-off there. I'm not saying this is an obvious pick, and I understand the Texans picked it last.
I think he needed to be – I think he needed to be picked. I just don't know if he should have been the third pick. But
Doug, right, if Jeremy Rucker had gone pro, would he be number one on this list?
Well, it's one of those things you start packaging it together, yeah, right? That it's like, oh, man, they have two tight ends, and that's going to be some stuff when we start drafting our guys who are going to leave. There's a guy that I have in my head that it's like, well, if he's the first guy to leave at a position, they're okay. If he's the second guy to leave at that position and he also leaves, holy guacamole, I think it's their biggest loss, right? And so I do think they needed – right. I mean, you wouldn't have wanted to lose Farrell and Ruckert off last year the way this tight end room was. Yeah. The fact that Ruckert stayed was huge. If we want to do a ranking of who are the most important guys that stayed, I mean, it's like Chris Olave, Thayer Munford, Jeremy Ruckert, Haskell Garrett. Those are all four like number one draft picks that they got back this year that they honestly didn't have much reason to expect to have back. So point taken. All right, Steven, you have the fourth pick now in our guys who are missed the most.
Quick question. Just for the clarification, do we have to pick them based off of what they were in 2020 or just like the player in general?
No, you can take them. I mean, to me, it's based on what you think they would have been in 2021 if they were here.
Okay. Sean Wade, but his 2019, if he's playing,
I mean, you
covers.
Don't get to do that. I mean, so, but if you,
that's
if you
that was my question. Yeah.
So, but don't, yeah. But you well, think Sean Wade, you move him back inside.
Yes.
As you're the DB's coach and you're telling Sean, listen, man, we got your look outside, but you're going back inside for this year.
Yes. Especially now that, I mean, he'd be the cover safety. I think you'd be a little bit more sure. There wouldn't be a situation of like, should Cameron Martinez be the passing down cover safety while Marcus Williamson as the veteran be the run? It's just no. Sean Wade's out there and we're pretty sure about that position. And it hasn't been right for the last 2 years.
Could you get him to do it? You think he'd do it now that he had the year outside? And actually, the year outside didn't go so great. Let's give you one more year of film with your best stuff.
We'll think he'd go for it. Yeah, I think he'd go for it.
Nathan, what do you think? Think Steven can make that case to Sean? Get him back inside? I think there's a case to make. I think he maybe could.
I think that argument makes sense, but I don't think it would have worked to bring him back. I think they would have said, well, we did that. We excelled in 2019. We showed everybody how good of a cover safety we could be. We took our shot outside, and now it's time to go start an NFL career. He was a guy that seemed very, very, very ready to go get his NFL career started. So I don't know if that argument would have worked. Now, if he had to come back for some other reason, like the draft feedback had been so bad that there was no drawback to, I guess, coming back for another year, then I think the way this has played out that he might have ended back inside. And it's when you think about what this defense could be with 2019 Sean Wade at cover safety, that's pretty intriguing because he was great inside in 2019.
And you think about, I mean, he was a fifth round pick. He got traded. I think he was inactive for the Patriots against the Browns last week. Like, like you're saying, if he would have gotten bad draft feedback, I mean, if he knew he was going to be a fifth round pick, get traded in camp, and then be inactive on game days. I mean, he's getting checked. I mean, guys are inactive all the time. I get it. It's hard to be part of the game day 45 or 46. But I don't know. Like you said, he showed it on tape in 2019, but come back, show it again, Steven, right? Show it again. Yeah. Remind people after putting out less great film in 2020. I don't know. I mean, like you already showed the versatility. Remind people of what you can do. Maybe he would have gone higher than the fifth round if he really had a great year in the slot.
He wouldn't have been a first rounder, but like he's essentially a strong safety in the NFL. And that could have been a second round pick easily, which is a lot more money. I mean, the sell points, the pitches, people thought you were a top 10 pick and all you were doing was playing slot corner. So
people didn't think he was a top 10 pick.
Like way too early mock drafts, he was top 10 pick initially. That was the whole, like, that's the thought that he might be the first.
So was Seven Banks.
Top 10 in the whole draft as a slot corner? That's what people look said at in 2019?
Yeah, go look at those way too early mock drafts.
But who?
Mel Kiper. Mel Kiper had him as the first cornerback taken off the board. Some of those way too
find
early
that.
Mock drafts.
Find that. I want to find that.
Yeah, I will. I will find it. And that's the point of the matter is he could have turned himself into a second round pick if he'd have just been doing that, and people would have been seeing him as a strong safety this entire time.
Yeah. No, that's a case. I mean, that's a case. Like, show people, remind people of what you do best, as opposed to sort of in the end, he went out looking with film in his final year that wasn't as good as the year before, even if it was at a more desirable position. Sean Wade was eighth. Luke Farrell was ninth. Sean Wade was eighth on our draft board for the texters. All right, Nathan, you have the fifth pick. Who are you taking?
I'll take Baron Browning here. I think even though Mike was not his best fit during his time at Ohio State, I think he might be this team's best linebacker. As we look at personnel, I mean, especially if Warren also coming back. Mm-hmm. But also, this is a defense that has been a little bit more open to moving guys around and finding a niche. So would he, what if he was, you know, your Mike in the nickel packages, if he did like the Craig Young kind of things that are happening in the dime packages, I think he would just been a better version of a lot of things that they're already doing with linebackers who are just a step down. So I think he would just be a guy who would make this defense better, even if he isn't, even if I don't know that he's a first down starter, though he might actually, but he still might be at Mike linebacker. He might still have been this team's best Mike linebacker.
We're leaning into the linebacker play hasn't been great. And they lost their four top guys at linebacker. I didn't put Justin Hilliard or Huff Borland on the list of nine, but Baron Browning was certainly up there. He was fourth on our texter list. Steven, what do you think of trying to bring back Baron Browning here?
I agree. I think both linebackers need to be picked on this list because the linebacker play has been bad. But just to wrap up the Sean Wade conversation, ESPN headline, Ohio State cornerback Sean Wade, potential top 10 pick in the 2021 draft, opts out of senior season. And in the article, it says Sean Wade was listed as the number 7 prospect on the big board of ESPN Mel Kiper Jr. earlier this month.
All right. I'm not listening to Mel Kiper anymore.
that's where you tune out. But yes, with the Baron Browning, I agree. Yeah, maybe like I said, when we were talking about Pete Warner, when they're just playing two inside linebackers, Baron Browning and Pete Warner would just be your starting linebackers, and you feel a lot more comfortable about what's going on. And then it wouldn't matter if Steel Chambers was able to emerge or not.
Yeah. Okay, I think I agree with that too. Browning definitely needs to be drafted in the 6-man draft. Here are the options that are left. Wyatt Davis, Josh Myers, Jonathan Cooper, Tommy Togiai. And I don't have like a super strong feeling about any of them. I think Josh Myers is probably better than Luke Whipler, but I don't think it's been a huge problem. I think Wyatt Davis, I mean, it would be good, but, you know, Paris Johnson and Thayer Munford have been pretty good the way things have worked out, and they have a third guard that's played. Tommy Togiai is interesting. I mean, I think he – but I don't know. I'm going to take Jonathan Cooper almost for the intangible stuff that, like, on a team that was young and, like, this, you know, they were changing defensive stuff. It seemed like everybody loved Coop. He wore the block O. Maybe he just could have helped settle stuff down when guys were like blowing assignments against Oregon. I don't know that I need Jonathan Cooper's production when I have Tyreek Smith and Zach Harrison and JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer. But also Tyreek Smith was hurt early in the year and has, you know, made a huge difference the last couple of weeks. So I think I'd take Coop, not convincingly. I'd hear an argument for anybody else. Steven, is Coop the right pick here or no?
It makes sense, especially given what their schedule was at the beginning of the year. I think the only case for Wyatt is that it's very obvious Paris Johnson is playing out of position. And I mean, but you get that type of talent on the field the best way you can. I think the interior defensive line is fine now. Tommy Togiai kind of in the same mold as Jonathan Cooper, just a better football player. But if that's where you're given what the schedule was, if you just had Tommy Togiai and Haskell Garrett on the field, you'd have been fine with it. And then other than that, I mean, Luke Whipler has been good at, it's been pretty good. So Josh Myers, I mean, you're fine there. So yeah, I'm fine with the Jonathan Cooper pick.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out Togiai. It's like, but you know, Antoine Jackson, I think has been pretty good, and they
have more depth this year
in there. And
yeah,
I mean, even Haskell Garrett's not been playing as much the last couple of weeks. So, Nathan, I don't know if you had a strong take either way on any of this stuff, but I wasn't particularly swayed by any of them.
I was thinking about Cooper, guys who would have maybe specifically helped against Oregon.
Yeah.
Like he might have made a difference in that game, setting the edge better, not falling for some of the problems that they had in that game. But I, like you guys, there's a big range. It does make me wonder sometimes, though, like someone like Togiai specifically against stopping the run also would have been huge. And that's still like the last unanswered question for this defense. And he might have just shored that up a little bit more this year. And the other, it's one of those things, again, like everybody else has been decent. Yep. But maybe he would have been like great and sort of like that way that you don't always even notice a defensive tackle being great.
It is interesting. Cooper went in the seventh round and has like a real role in Denver.
Yeah.
And Togiai went in the third round and fourth round. And
he's not even active most of the time.
He was active. The Browns cut Andrew Billings last week, one of their defensive tackles, and that made Togiai active, I think, for the first time all year. So now he's like fourth among a four-man defensive tackle rotation, but he'd been fifth among a four-man rotation for the whole year. So Togiai taken higher, Cooper much more active as a rookie. But I also think Togiai might have gone a year early. And I think the Browns kind of knew that. And I think he might pay off down the line. But I think, you know, everybody loves Coop. So I think everybody, you always could use a Coop, I think. All right. Pete Werner, Justin Fields. Who'd I take? Luke Farrell. Sean Wade, Baron Browning, Jonathan Cooper. They're in pretty decent shape. They survived the guys who left last year. That's usually what happens at Ohio State. You usually do survive. Who are they going to miss the most next year? We'll talk about the seniors. We'll talk about the juniors who could be leaving. And we'll dive into the brunt of this Buckeye Talk next after this. All right, back on Buckeye Talk, we're going to start talking about the guys who are potentially playing their last game in Ohio Stadium on Saturday. All the usual suspects, a bunch of seniors. And I know Kirby Smart and Georgia announced this week. I think they're having like 30 guys walk on senior day, but half of them have eligibility. It is a thing that I think it's cool to get to run out of the tunnel and hug your coach and hug your parents and give your parents a flower and whatever. Like I think it kind of stinks that, you know, some of the best players in Ohio State history were denied that because you go pro as a junior and you never get senior day. But also it's like, if you have eligibility and you do it, then it's like, ha, that guy's not coming back. And so they've never done it with guys who at least aren't technically seniors, right? So Nicholas Petit-Frere, the one guy this applies to this year is Nicholas Petit-Frere is a redshirt junior, but he's going to walk on senior day. And it's like, oh, is that an indication? Of course it's an indication. I mean, like we all thought he was going to go pro anyway, because he's going to be probably a really high pick and he's had an excellent year. But it's a little bit of a indication, Nathan, right? I mean, it's not a shock. But like, for instance, Zach Harrison and Garrett Wilson, I don't think they give those guys that option because they're true juniors. So you're not like a senior in any way. Nicholas Petit-Frere has the option. I almost wish they would give anybody who thinks they're going to leave the option. And maybe it could be you only get to walk once. So if you walk as a junior and you come back, you don't get to walk as a senior or whatever. I don't know. But I wish Joey Bosa and Ezekiel Elliott and guys like and had been able to go through that. But Nicholas Petit-Frere, Nathan, it is some indication, right, that he's not – this is it for him.
You would think so, yeah. But as you said, that doesn't surprise anybody. I think the question – I mean, there was question after last year. Is he coming back again? Even because he'd only had the one really good year and he was playing right tackle. So the way this has worked out for him, I think, surprises nobody. And the one pushback I would give on your idea is, so then do you open it up to, like, if you're a third-year junior and you're just not playing, so now you're going to transfer. Do you get to go through senior day? Like who makes that choice? I think I see what you're saying. What you're saying makes sense, but I also think it's okay to reserve some things for people who actually are seniors, either because they've given 4 years to the program or longer.
I like the Nicholas Petit-Frere way because academically he's at least a senior.
Yeah.
You know, he's graduating from college. It was crazy that Clemson let Trevor Lawrence do it last year because he was, I mean, I don't know what his academic standing is, but I'm all for it. If you've been here for 4 years, you should be able to do it regardless of what your athletic eligibility is.
But I do think the idea of, like, if you stay 4 years, you're giving something to the university by getting a piece of paper at the end of it that's somehow more valuable than what a superstar football player. Listen, Trayvon Henderson is probably going to be here 3 years. What he's going to give right. the university is going to dwarf what almost every senior who walks is going to do. So why shouldn't he get to walk out, feel the adulation, and hug his parents? Like, I don't know. And I understand it's a little clunky. I get that. But figure it out.
I think you'd have to call it something other than senior day.
Call it farewell day.
Yeah, maybe something like that. And I would say if you're a third year junior, but you're on schedule to graduate like at the end of the spring, because I think Master Teague did that. Master Teague had graduated before this year. He's already in grad school as a fourth year junior football eligibility wise. So like if you're on that kind of pace, that to me almost supersedes like you're better than a senior. You're like you did 4 years of school in 3 years. Like you should get the baby walk on senior.
They're here all year. They're here for three. Yeah, they're here spring, summer, and fall taking classes while the average student.
But not everybody does that.
But is it really about graduating? It's about you got a piece of paper because you took some AP classes in high school and another guy didn't. That's really what this is about. You're gonna walk. That's what graduation's for. This is at a football stadium before a football game. It's a football ceremony. So if you took AP classes and you got done in the spring instead of in the that's not what it's about. It should be. It's a way for fans to express their appreciation individually in a way that they almost never get to do. Otherwise, everything else is expressed toward the team. This is your moment. Troy Smith had a moment with those fans, man. And Ezekiel Elliott didn't. Joey Bosa didn't. Garrett Wilson's not gonna. Trayvon Henderson's probably gonna get him. Why? Because they didn't get their piece of paper in time, and because they might come back, even though everybody knows they're not gonna come back. I just wish those guys could have a moment. Whatever you call it, change the name. Call it Have a Moment Day.
Or have a different ceremony for those guys. Have a post-game thing where you recognize those very, very couple special players at most every year. You know what I mean? Have a different kind of send off for them. You don't necessarily have to lump that all those guys in with senior day too. We don't like that because it'll delay our interviews. But
do you think there's something special? Like, are seniors more special than juniors who are going to the NFL? Should they get extra appreciation?
There's something to be said for the guys who put in 4 or 5 years. But I know what you're. I understand what you're saying. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, really. And I just think you couldn't call it senior day anymore.
But what
Doug is like dying on the hill of like go away with senior day.
But he's what is on that hill. You said something is to be said. What is to be said?
It's one of those things. It's just one of those things that has a tradition that has outlived, that has crossed into the modern era when we don't look at players the same way anymore. Like players used to not leave early. Players used to not play as freshmen, that sort of thing. And football and all of college sports from an eligibility standpoint has completely turned over. And yet we've kept these same traditions from like the 30s or whatever that have just rolled on through.
Bingo.
Thank you for that wonderful argument for what I'm saying. Yes, exactly right. Which I think we all basically agree on. Change the name. But it used to be because it used to designate it's your final home game. And that's what it still is attempting to designate, except it's leaving out all the best players. But a bunch of walk-ons who nobody even knows their names get to run out. And I'm not saying don't let the walk-ons run out. I'm just saying also let your best players run out. Live in the world.
If that's the case, I mean, his would be their argument. If that's the case, players have to announce they're going to the NFL earlier than they should, then they have to.
But just say you get it's adulation day. You get one adulation day. Take it whenever you want. Trayvon Henderson could take it this year if he wants. It's separate from when you go pro because you don't have to announce anything, but you get one adulation day. That's all I'm saying. All right, let's have a draft. We did our draft already about who they missed most this year from last year. But before our draft, we're going to talk about who are the guys that we think aren't going to be here. So when we do our draft, we're going to do three rounds. So we'll pick 9 players. We're going to do anybody that might leave. And this is not transfers. So we're not drafting Quinn Ewers. We're not drafting Kyle McCord. We're drafting guys who might turn pro or playing their last game because of pro things. So I think you can draft a guy who you really think is going to stay, but would be quite a thing if he left. So let's talk about four guys in particular. We don't have Nicholas Petitfrere on this list because if he's walking on senior day, then the way it is now, he's probably a senior, so there's not really much to discuss. Do you think Garrett Wilson's going pro? Nathan, is he going pro, yes or no? True, yes. Junior.
Yes, yes, yes.
Steven?
Yeah, he's out of here.
Shed a tear. Shed a tear.
He gave
it. If he doesn't leave, I'll drag him out of the facility myself and hire an agent for him.
In tears. Steven's like,
yeah,
this is for your own good.
Right.
You have to leave. You have to. I love you, which because that's why you have to leave.
That's real love. You don't really love someone if you're not willing to let them go be the best version of themselves.
I'm hearing an essay on Cleveland.com. Dear Garrett.
I'm definitely going to, as soon as that announcement comes out, I'm definitely going to have a post entitled A Tribute to Garrett Wilson, Why You Made My First Couple Years Covering Ohio State Football Special.
That will be his adulation day. He doesn't get it in Ohio Stadium, but he gets it on Cleveland.com from Stephen
Hayes. Yep.
So,
and then he'll he'll shout out 11 Warriors.
Yeah, 11 Warriors were aggregated in like their morning roundup. He'll be like, oh, I saw Stephen Means' thing on 11 Warriors. Like, thanks, Stephen. Everybody thinks he's going. He said it on Tuesday when he was asked about it. He gave like a real answer to. I've stopped asking the are you going to go pro questions because like nobody answers them. Like Zach Harrison said, I'm thinking about Michigan State when he got asked his. And then Garrett got asked his and Garrett was like, oh, no, yeah, I'm thinking about it. Yeah, I mean, I got a decision to make. It was like, oh, wow, you are so smart and honest. Don't leave, but you have to leave. 97% of the texters say he's gone. Of course he's gone. Zach Harrison. Nathan, this is an interesting one. And we've talked about this all year with Zach Harrison. He's a very good player. Could he show even more? Probably. Is he a very like holistic, well-rounded individual who you could imagine coming back for a fourth year of college despite a high draft grade? Yes. Is he an also excellent football player who maybe should go now because he's an excellent football player? You can go get paid for football? Yes. I don't know that we have a read on this because it's hard to read Zach Harrison. So this, we're all guessing. We're trying to be intuitive based on what we think his personality is. And we know, for instance, that his family was very particular and precise about his recruiting decision, right? So they will be particular and precise about his NFL decision. And I'm sure they will have a chart and I'm sure they will have a pro and con list. And I do think there are some pros and cons for Zach Harrison, but one of the pros is go get money now. Nathan, what's your vote on Zach Harrison?
I'm leaning yes, he goes right now. His Pro Football Focus grade among, especially if you go by people who actually play every down or almost every down for Ohio State's defense, is sky high, the best on this team. Like, not even close. Now, the thing that gives me some pause is when you start evaluating your own draft status in this class, where would we rank him among just Big Ten defensive ends who are going to get drafted next spring?
It's true.
Like, he's not ahead of Carl Loftus. I know what Ohio State just did to Carl Loftus, but Carl Loftus has a higher draft grade from pretty much everybody out there. He's not ahead of Aiden Hutchinson. So you're no better than third just among Big Ten defensive ends, let alone around the country. So will that be a factor? Will this just be a very edge rush heavy draft that he would have a harder time cracking the first round and they would see a benefit for him coming back next year and going in that draft? I think that's the one thing that might keep him here. But just in terms of production, I know that he hasn't been a superstar here, but he's still been a pretty darn good football player, and I think he probably leaves.
What do you think, Steven?
Nathan just made a lot of my point. I think it might just fringe on. Is he like this for years, Chris Olave, where like it's so deep that it's almost worth coming back another year just so you can get a little bit more money? But I'm still going to lean. Yeah, he's out of here. Like Nathan said, the PFF grade is crazy. I think he's gotten held a lot the last couple of weeks, and NFL scouts will be able to see that on film. He's not an elite pass rusher. He's a pretty good pass rusher, but he's really good at stopping the run. And that's something he came into college with. And that's often more important if you're not going to be Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack. You know what I'm saying? Is your ability to stop the run. And I think that there's value in that. So I think he goes.
But he has a very good PFF pass rush grade, actually. 87.
Yeah. 87, yeah.
So it's again, if it's people grade these, pro scouts don't grade on the end result. They grade on what happens before the snap and then as the snap happens. You know what I mean? Like it's a different way of analyzing talent.
What did the Chargers head coach say? Like he like broke it down one day on how sometimes NFL GMs will value the hurry over the sack more because sack sometimes is kind of just it kind of works out in your favor. Yeah, you're right place, right hurries. That means you're consistently getting pressure, and he leads Ohio State in hurries with 16.
A guy who's like a big physical defensive end who's kind of better against the run than against the pass is Jadeveon Clowney, and he was the first overall pick. I mean, and he's been like a really productive NFL player. I could see Zach Harrison, something like that. Sam Hubbard was pick 77 in the third round. Tyquan Lewis was the last pick of the second round at pick 64. I think Zach Harrison goes above both of them. I think his package of skills is more elite than either of them. I could see Zach Harrison like right now going like in the 40s or 50s in the second round. I don't know for sure that he's a first round pick. But, and it's one of these things, I don't, you know, Ryan Day and Larry Johnson aren't going to make a case that would be against Zach Harrison's interests. I don't think they're about that. But I think you maybe could make a case, hey, Zach, you're maybe between 30 and 50 in this draft, and here's what we think you could do next year and why it might make you a top 15 pick. I think that case, Stephen, is maybe there to be made. And for a big picture, holistic, local guy who cares about life, not that any of these other guys don't,
I think you can sell the in-state guy on that better than you could have.
Spin it, you know, because Zach Harrison, I mean, like the Bosas and Dwayne Haskins and other guys have said, man, I came on a three-year plan. Yeah. Like, I don't know that Zach Harrison came in necessarily on a three-year plan. Now, if it works out, you take it. But I could see the sell job that could work, Stephen.
I'm thinking, like, let's just say Chase had had this exact same career as Zach's had. I think Chase is out of here because he's a national recruit, three-year plan. It doesn't matter if he – maybe if everybody thought maybe he can turn himself into a top 15 pick. I think because Zach's from here, literally he's 15 minutes away from the school, you might be able to sell him on that. And it works out for everybody because now you're talking Zach Harrison, Jack Sawyer, JT Tuimoloau, or just rotating through those two defensive end spots. And that's pretty dominant. And then Zach turns himself into a, as I said, he's the defensive end rooms. He's a defensive end Chris Olave, basically.
Yeah. It's out there. I also will pick he leaves because I think anytime you have a talented guy and it's close, you have to lean leave and then be surprised when he comes back. But I don't think it's a slam dunk and the texters are very split on it. Zach Harrison, stay 53%, leave 47%. So that will be one to watch for sure. That will be one to watch. Let's do Ronnie Hickman, who I kind of threw in there again. It's like, I don't know, Ronnie Hickman, is this what we're really thinking about? He's had a really good year. We think he's maybe been the best player on the defense for a team that's trying to win a national title. That's not nothing. National recruit was a top 150 national recruit. Steven, like on some level, I'm like, what? But on another level, it's like, listen, man, you got to be realistic about this stuff. This guy is a versatile guy who I think could be a flexible safety. He's shown he can play in the box, right? Physical, can cover, can tackle. We got to at least talk about it. What do you think on Ronnie?
I was like split here. I kept going back and forth. And I think I'm going to say leave. Even if I think he should come back, I think he might just be Tommy Togiai of this year, where it's like he's having a really good year playing in as a strong safety. That's what he's freaking going to play in the NFL. And it seems like that's a guy where it's he's not the best version of himself, but you max out on the fact that you're having a really good year and you go get paid to learn how to play the position better.
There is a strike while the iron is hot case here. Go ahead, Nathan.
I was going to say, I think that's a decent analogy, except where I think it might break down is Tommy Togiai was this like physical specimen, like this freak of just like the strongest, could was maybe going to go to the combine and be like the strongest guy there if they had a conventional combine, or you know what I mean, was just like this wall of a guy. And I know the position is different and that affects it. I just don't know that he jumped off the page at you in some ways physically, and I don't really see that from Ronnie Hickman. So I would say stay, just to give himself another year of exposure and another year of improvement, because he was a guy who really hadn't played very much at all before this year. Even Togiai had been in a rotation before that. Hickman, because of injuries, because of other things, was kind of a guy who was out of sight, out of mind until very late last year when in a COVID game at Michigan State, he pops through. And he's been very productive. He's been an important part of this defense, and I think he will be again next year.
This would be a case for like the Marshawn Lattimore award, like 1 year starter and out. And I don't know that we would have had him high on that list. Did we have him high on that list before this year?
I don't remember if we did or not, but one of the keys to that is not just that they leave to be a draft pick. It's that they break through like all America kind of status. And Hickman's been good, but he hasn't been that good.
Well, but the question is, what's his ceiling? Like, is he going to work himself into a first round pick as a strong safety, no matter what he does?
Like, you know, that's like, not going to happen.
I don't know.
Right.
It might be a strike while the iron is hot. He was a top 150 national recruit. He is a national guy. I don't know. I'm split. There's usually a guy that sort of surprises you by leaving. I think it's always like, well, these are the kind of the obvious guys. And then this guy that Togiai might have fit. So I think this might be my guy for that. So I'll pick leave as like that. I don't really think he's going to leave, but he's the guy I'll pick to leave and be surprised by. One more guy. This is the most interesting one because he's another candidate for the not expected, but it happens. DeJuan Jones, 1 year starter. Talk about PFF grade, Nathan, right? This is another guy with a PFF grade through the roof. The texters say 77% stay, 23% leave on DeJuan Jones. Did I say it on Hickman? 89% stay, 11% leave on Hickman. So people think there's a little better chance that DeJuan Jones goes. Nathan, where are you on DeJuan?
I went stay on DeJuan. As good as he's been this year, it's another case of just the 1 year. And what could he do? Could he look at Nicholas Petit-Frere and say, what can I do in that second year? The only difference being he won't move to left tackle. Left tackle, I think, is spoken for. So that's what gives me some pause with him, is that if you're just coming back to play another year of right tackle, although Nicholas Petit-Frere didn't know at the time he was coming back for another year to play right, to play left tackle. I just, with DeJuan, how recent it's been for him, and because of the transformation he's been going through in his career, I think they could sell him of another year of physical development. Another year of being a full-time player takes you to an even higher level. His, I think, is going to depend a lot on the feedback he gets. Last year with Josh Myers, I think Josh Myers was ready to stay and come back for another year at Ohio State. I think a big part of his mind was set on that, and he got the feedback from the NFL, and he was like, oh, I guess I got to go. Like, and then he's a second-round pick. Like, there's something you can't turn down. I think that might – something like that could really hinge for DeJuan Jones.
I think DeJuan, I like that comparison to Josh Myers thing. Yeah, I think they're, because he's playing right tackle and because this is like really the first extended action he's had, because even Northwestern was really the only game in 2019 where we saw a lot of him. Yep. I think when they go to get his draft grade, it's going to be a lot of, I just need to see it again.
That makes sense. And I do think that like there's a more of a physical transformation that's still happening that I think doesn't apply as much to someone like Ronnie Hickman. Like I think Ronnie Hickman kind of probably is who he is. He just can do it more. I'm not sure that DeJuan is who he is yet. Like he still probably can get a little bit stronger, maybe can drop a little more weight, maybe can get a little better with his feet, although he's done all those things very well. But the intrinsic stuff with his size and his reach and his natural gifts, his athleticism, and how much he has dedicated himself to the position now. And again, these all, you did the big story on DeJuan, Nathan, a couple of weeks ago. I mean, again, this is sort of like the first year of him being like, okay, I'm a football player. So like, would he go that quick? I think, again, I would say stay on him because I think there's more he can do. And if it hits, and as Stud said, if it hits, he's a first round pick. I don't know that he's a first round pick yet, but I sure think there's a world. If he comes back next year and does more of this plus, he could get there.
Something to keep in mind, though, these next couple games are potential showcase games for him in an important way, because both Michigan State and Michigan, unlike Purdue, where Karlaftis was really their only guy up front, these next couple teams have like multiple edge rushers that Ohio State's going to have to probably man up and defend in a different way. I don't know if they're going to be able to help as much, and there's going to be more opportunities for like one-on-one with Aiden Hutchinson, one-on-one with Panasiuk and the other guy that Michigan State has, and the other guy that Michigan has, and who knows who they play beyond that. I mean, obviously, if you get all the way to Georgia, that's another showcase opportunity against a really strong defensive front. So as good as he's been this year, he actually has an opportunity to really impress people in this next 6 weeks.
And I will say, I mean, we all talked about it when Northwestern played Ohio State a couple of years ago, and Rasheed Walker. No, is that his name? Yeah. No, I get the Penn State guy and the Northwestern guy.
Rasheed Walker, basically his entire draft film was, I went up against Chase Young.
Yeah. And then he even opted out last year, and it was still like 19 film that got him through, and he was a first round pick. There were moments when DeJuan Jones was swallowing George Karloftis. It was like, oh, look, there's that first round pass rusher. I can't even see him because DeJuan Jones blocked him, and now he's just a shadow. Where it was like, oh no, that's his film. Like, and you're right, Nathan. Like, he's going to be able to put together some film where, depending, right, he could enter a no choice mode. Because if he, like, if he takes care of Aiden Hutchinson, because there was the, in the reverse of this a little bit, when Jake Long was clearly going to be a first round tackle for Michigan, he wound up being the number one pick in the draft. And Ohio State, Michigan played 1 year, and like Vernon Golston took it to Jake Long, and it was like, well, Vernon Golston's going. And Vernon Golston was the number six pick in the draft because like he won the day against a future number one pick. If DeJuan Jones wins the day against Aiden Hutchinson, this might be like Mike Conley, right? Again, the examples of guys were like, oh, we knew he was good, but we thought he needed to come back for a year or two. And then it's like, oh, no, wait, I'm too good. So I think it's on the table for DeJuan, but I think we all stay at the moment.
Yeah.
Is that right? We're all staying on him at the
really,
moment.
Yeah. 2 weeks from now, we might have a very different outlook
on
this.
If Aiden Hutchinson disappears in 2 weeks, and then George's defensive line just goes absent in 2 months from now, yeah, I'm going to drag him too, along with Garrett Wilson, on out the door to go get paid. I'm just going to be dragging members of the 2019 recruiting class behind, putting them all in a van and saying, come on, let's go to the combine.
No, one of those guys easier to drag around than the other, by the way.
You might want to drag those
one at a time.
It's a team effort to get DeJuan on the bus.
That will be put him on a skateboard or something.
Yeah. Steven
drags out Garrett, and then he calls us. He's like, hey, Doug and Nathan, can you come please help me drag DeJuan to the combine? He doesn't want to go. He likes it here. I'm making him leave.
I'm starting to do a math problem. Like, how long would it take for Steven Means to drag DeJuan Jones to Indianapolis?
If Steven Means drags DeJuan Jones 1 inch an hour, how many months would it take him to drag him out of the Woody? All right, let's do a draft. I sent how many names to the texters? I sent 13 names to the texters. On the defensive side of the ball, I sent Haskell Garrett. I sent Tyreek Smith. I sent Zach Harrison. I sent Cam Brown. I sent Seven Banks. I sent Marcus Williamson. I sent Ronnie Hickman. On the offensive side of the ball, I sent Jeremy Ruckert. I sent Thayer Munford, Nicholas Petit-Frere, DeJuan Jones, Garrett Wilson, and Chris Olave. So again, this is how good they are, who the Buckeyes have coming in behind them next year, and then positional value and just how much are you going to be missed. We'll draft 9 and then talk about the guys we didn't draft. Nathan, I'll give you the first pick on this one. Who you take?
If you look at where, because you've seen this, you've said many times, yes, good guys leave, but there's always somebody good falling in behind them. And I think the one position where I think that is not the case, even though there's talented guys we are listing who will be leaving all over the place, is tight end. And I would put Jeremy Ruckert first on this list.
It's a little bit of the Farrell conversation, but more important because there's not another
amplified. Exactly.
You definitely agree, Steven?
Yeah. The idea of G. Scott and Cade Stover being the next Ruckert Farrell pairing sounds good. I'm not putting my money on it yet. You know, I'm just not going to bank on it until I see it. So, yeah, it's wholeheartedly Jeremy Ruckert is the guy they're going to miss the most.
G. Scott's not even playing right now, and that's not a knock against G. Scott. We knew that this was going to be a year of transformation for him. But again, as far as what you're like, as you're saying it, putting your money on, we're not seeing I don't think we're seeing what tight end is going to look like for them next year. We can imagine it almost everywhere else. this seems like a place where they may even have to look at a transfer if there's one available out there in a big way.
I'll be fair though. He flashed. It was Rutgers. Rutgers stinks, but he had some moments. But yeah, I won't be shocked if they bring in somebody else. Even if, actually, no, I'd be kind of shocked if they brought in a transfer just because there's a lot of people in that room. They're gonna have like five guys in that room.
But it's just it's a lot of question marks though, right?
I mean, yeah.
the two top guys are position switches, and then the other guys are not huge recruits. They haven't like there's not a Rucker. Ruckert was a big time tight end recruit that you knew was a tight end, and there's not a Rucker in that room. It doesn't mean there's not a solution, but there's not an obvious solution right now. And it is one of those things. I feel like they're being hard on him. Again, in the ongoing discussion of say nice things about guys who need it and say sort of like be critical of the good players. When we had Kevin Wilson the other day, at like 2 weeks ago, and Kevin Wilson was like, oh, yeah, he's got to catch that fourth down pass. And again, I think that fourth down play that didn't hit against Nebraska to start, it's like, that's your fourth down play, a tight end down the seam with the linebacker right on top of him. And then it's like, oh, Jeremy should have caught that. It's like the guy was right on top of him. And then even the other day, so like he didn't, Steven, you did the champions list this week. Didn't the whole offense grade a champion except for Rucker?
Except him. Yeah, I think. One, because as Harlow said, they held to their standard, not necessarily Ohio State standard. But he's not – his PFF grades aren't great. Cade Stover actually has a better PFF grade than him. Now, granted, Rutgers played 100 more snaps than him, but still, like, Cade Stover's graded out better. He's been – he's dropped some balls.
He's played like 300 more snaps than Cade Stover.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So I was looking at the run-blocking snaps. And Kevin Wilson kind of brought up that he needs to get Cade on the field more for whatever that means. But he's been okay. But he's dropped some balls. He had the holding call against Purdue over the weekend. He's been decent, but I don't know if he's been elite level, but he's still, you know, he still should be first year.
But I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, if you think about like the things that the last 2 weeks, a fourth down throw that was covered, that again, I questioned that play call. They act like it was a perfect play call and it worked exactly how they wanted it to. And it's like, there was a guy running step for step with him. And then the holding call that again was, can you block one-on-one a first-round defensive end, and you blocked him initially, and at the end of the block, it was kind of a hold. It's not like he just tackled the guy. So
he body slammed him.
In a game where they didn't throw him the ball. Like we said, they didn't. Their tight ends didn't play tight end against Purdue. They played sixth offensive lineman. So I do think, like, I think they're asking a lot of him, right? It's one of those things, Nathan, where they have a really high standard for what Jeremy Rucker is and what he can do because he has done a lot of things. And I don't know if I'm saying this the right way. Like, they're going to have to lower their standard next year because you're not going to have anybody, at least in the first half of next year, that you're going to be able to ask them to do the same things at the same level that Jeremy Ruckert's doing this year.
Well, or somebody's just going to have to take a big jump. I mean, Stover's going to have to take a big jump now in his what will be his third year at tight end or something like that. Or G. Scott will have to have a breakthrough. Like, that's kind of what they're banking on right now. I actually think there's ways that Rutgers maybe has enhanced his draft status in some ways this year by coming back and having to be such a carry so much of a bigger load than he did last year when he was, you know, in tandem with Farrell. Because, but it all depends on how teams feel about him as a, whether he's blocking well or not, I think is the question. PFF does not think he's blocking well this year.
Really? Interesting. Okay. All right, Steven, what's your pick here at number two?
Before, I'm going to go Ronnie because I don't know what position Court Williams is playing yet.
If Ronnie Hickman leaves, though, does that clarify what position Court Williams plays? Or do you have some doubt about whether if that position is really just safety and you're a deep safety a lot of the time, does that fit Court Williams?
That's what it yeah, if the bullet is going to go back to being what the bullet was at the beginning of the year and Court Williams is just going to be a deep safety, then I'm a little worried about who's going to be playing the bullet position. But if it's going to be what we're seeing now, then I guess I'm a little bit more comfortable because you can put Court Williams in that role. So that's pretty much what it is, because I don't know what they're going to do if Ronnie Hickman leaves. It's more than it's I don't know who's going to play it.
Yeah. We know what they want to do. We thought we knew what they wanted to do philosophically. They kind of changed what they wanted to do philosophically. And Ronnie Hickman, as it turns out, was a fit for either. He was able to do both of those things. There may not be a guy on the roster with the same positional flexibility, But it does seem like Court Williams would be an answer. And Craig Young has kind of switched out of that role and is playing that stand-up spy, third down pass rusher role. And Court really is Ronnie Hickman's backup right now. Craig Young is not really at that position anymore, it seems. He's not his backup. So I think they would figure out Court Williams can be this. Court Williams can be one of our best 11, however we can figure that. But Steven, I understand why you picked it, because they asked Ronnie to do a lot this year, and I think he's done everything they've asked him to do. And it's almost, Nathan, two different positions.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just been, his versatility has been as important as anything else. And even though it's not versatility in the name that they give it, but just what you can do with him on any given snap. And I agree with Steven that some of that is a little bit hard to gauge for next year, because are we convinced that Ohio State won't try to go back to single high safety when they have a healthy Josh Proctor and reconfigure the defense back that way? I don't know. But Hickman gives them flexibility regardless of what they choose to do, I feel like. So he was very high on my list. If I had had the number two pick, it was probably going to be between him and someone else.
Okay. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. All right. I'm picking third, and I need to ask like a point of order. There's a guy that I want to pick, but it's only because somebody else is probably leaving. But do I have to pick the first guy first? You know what I mean? Because
no, if the first guy is like clearly leaving,
or then, like, if it's obvious, then you can pick the second guy.
Okay, then I'm going to pick the second guy
because he becomes that much more important.
Then I'm going to pick DeJuan Jones, assuming Nicholas Petit-Frere is leaving, that Paris Johnson is going to be a tackle next year, and then saying if they lose both starting tackles, Paris Johnson is one of the tackles. I'm not exactly sure who the other tackle is.
That's I think a good point that right now on this roster, it's hard to, I mean, Enoch Vamahi has been a backup at tackle this year. Josh Fryer has been a backup at tackle, but guys that we've never seen have to do this consistently at this level. So I think it's a big question to ask who does play tackle next year opposite Paris Johnson. We know who's going to play on the interior, I think, right? Like, the interior is not really a question. We assume Matt Jones comes back. We assume Whipler comes back. You got Harry Miller. You got Donovan Jackson. You've almost got too many people on the interior, but I don't see any of those guys kicking outside. So who plays tackle next year?
It's almost like we spent the entire summer talking about how bad the tackle recruiting was, you know? And so now we don't know who's going to play right tackle if DeJuan Jones leaves. Maybe I have to drag DeJuan back in the building. Yeah. Hey, DeJuan, I know we just got to the car after 45,000 days. But we got to go back because
it takes Steven a month to drag DeJuan out, and they get to the door and Stud's standing there. Stud's like, oh, you guys aren't going anywhere.
Yep.
It is weird. It's almost like the idea that if DeJuan would leave and Paris Johnson would be like, are you kidding me? Like, my first 2 years, we had four tackles. Now we have none. Now it's like, I mean, now they want two Paris Johnsons and Paris. Like, I was hunched over like a freaking guard blocking defensive tackles all year. And now Enoch Vamahi is going to get to start at tackle. Are you joking? I mean, it would be, they have four. And if they lose, they have four tackles right now. And if they lose three of the four, that'd be quite a thing. If DeJuan stays, they're set, right? I mean, like, they would have as good of a tackle pairing as anybody in the country. So do we think DeJuan's leaving? No, we all thought he's staying, but he's the guy that I was asking about, man, because you assume Petit-Frere is going. All right, let's go to the second round. Nathan, who you got?
Oh.
And I'll give you a moment to think, and I'll update this very quickly because I should have before. Okay. Ruckert was our number one pick. The Texters had him sixth. Hickman was our number two pick. The Texters had him eighth. DeJuan Jones was the number three pick. The Texters had him fifth. So the top four for the Texters are still on the board.
So as talented as this receiver group should still be next year, I think we would be remiss not to acknowledge, kind of as we did in the first segment, where we're talking about this offense missing Justin Fields, how much this offense could miss someone with Garrett Wilson's talent. I will take Garrett Wilson here.
Steven, you're nodding along. Is that the right pick?
Yeah, because if he took Chris, I was going to take Garrett. There's a reason the other guys are not playing. And you are just in the name of the 2018 linebacker class. We don't think that's going to happen with these wide receivers, but you have to leave a 5% space open of the reason isn't just these guys are so good.
No, that's a good point. That is, and they just have not gotten much of an opportunity to play. And again, both Chris and Garrett played as freshmen. Now, Garrett played the whole year. Chris played at the end of the year, but was big in the Michigan game. And so they kind of build up to this. I mean, we know Julian Fleming had to start in the Big Ten championship game last year, but really, you know, Marvin and Emeka and Julian are going to come in pretty raw, pretty undeveloped. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, CJ Stroud didn't have any experience before this year, and look what he's doing. But I do think that's worth taking into consideration. And if we do a whole podcast about how Garrett Wilson is the perfect Ohio State recruit, then no matter how good the guys behind him are, you have to acknowledge, well, you still might, even at your peak, you might not be Garrett Wilson. So I think that's possible. I think that's the right pick. And for the Texters, he was number one. Garrett Wilson for the Texters, 2.55. The next person was 4.35. So this was really big. Maybe influenced by the podcast they listened to yesterday. Really big that Garrett Wilson is the guy that will be missed the most next season. Pick number five, Steven, it's yours.
Yeah, I'm taking Chris. A lot of the same reasons. This offense cannot turn into CJ Stroud's only good weapon is Jackson Smith and Jigba, or you run the ball with Travion 45 times. That can't be what happens.
And I will say, Chris was second. So there's a gap, but Chris was second.
Yeah.
There's even a little bit more specificity of Olave's deep ball ability is a specific skill set that I know it seems like Julian is going to play that position, but Chris can really take you apart down the field. And that is, I don't think that's a guarantee that anybody on this roster will be that kind of threat on the bomb.
Yeah. Chris hasn't had a 100-yard game in like 4 weeks. I bet defenses don't stop scheming up for him the way that they have so far. I mean, and some of the reason why he doesn't is because of some penalties and some things that were out of his control. But yeah, he's the game changer. And are we sure Julian is the game changer?
Yeah. Do you agree with all this, Nathan?
Yeah. I mean, he would definitely be in the conversation to go here. And I'm thinking about this with some other guys. Like, so I think sometimes in these exercises, you downgrade a guy because you know he is leaving or has to leave. And it's not a choice that he's leaving. And so then maybe you discount how much they're going to miss him because they know they're going to miss him. But I think in this case, this is the right place to take him.
I think there's a line here. I think this to me is the top five, and I'm a little hesitant about who to take next. So I think you guys made the right picks here. I'm to like, I don't know. It's like a fantasy draft, like my handcuff. I'm going to handcuff DeJuan Jones by taking Nicholas Petit-Frere, because Nicholas Petit-Frere is the one we know is leaving, but him leaving is what makes DeJuan Jones even more thing, and that they have one tackle ready, but they don't have two. Like, if DeJuan doesn't go, you know, I think they should be fine, but I don't know who else to take. There's nobody jumping off the page at me. And I think this is an acknowledgement that tackle is super important. We all think Paris Johnson is going to be great, but like Nicholas Petit-Frere has been quite good for 2 years. And so this is an acknowledgement of that. Steven, I don't know who else to take, but in the tackle combo is quite a thing that they would miss.
It's funny. The tackle combo and the wide receiver combo just for the last four picks. And that feels right. And now I think we have to convince ourselves that some players are better than they actually are, which is going to be fun because Nathan gets to be the first to do it.
No, well, but I also think you could have made, we could have made a case to take Petit-Frere above the receivers, even just because at least at receiver, we know that they've recruited talented guys in behind them that are going to fill out that rotation. We're pretty sure. Maybe it'll be a little rough early on, but we're pretty sure. I don't think we think that they're leaving like a cavity, whereas there may be at tackle if both those guys leave.
And it's one of those things, it's all about having a backup. But if Paris Johnson got abducted by aliens, Petit-Frere would be first. Right? I mean, so Paris Johnson is what keeps that from happening. And that's why he's not first and he shouldn't be first. But I mean, you never know. I mean, Paris Johnson, again, you're not going to, you're a turned ankle away from being like, oh, they're playing Notre Dame in the opener and Josh Fryer and Enoch Vamahi, they're starting tackles because Paris Johnson got stung by a bee in the last week of camp. Like that's
CJ will start running in. You're going to be running a lot.
You know, like that's a world. But if you're playing Notre Dame in the opener and you've got Paris Johnson at left tackle and DeJuan Jones at right tackle, you're like, let's roll, baby. You're good to go. So that is just, that's the scenario that we're creating here. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with our final picks in our draft of the guys who will be missed the most if they're not here next year on Buckeye Talk. 614-350-3315. You get to, you know, vote on stuff. Tech subscriptions keep going up, keep adding people. We appreciate anybody who's new. We appreciate anybody who's been here from the get-go. We appreciate anybody who started sometime this year. We love it. Thanks to you guys for putting a little money in our company's pocket. It makes us able to do this. And we hope we provide value for you and make your Ohio State experience even more enjoyable. Number seven, Nathan, is you.
This is a difficult decision because this particular player that I'm going to take, it's not been a consistent presence, but when it's there, it's very obviously there. He's definitely leaving. He told me he's definitely leaving and it's time for him to leave. But, and as much as we assume that JTT and Jack Sawyer are going to be really good for this team starting next year, I'll take Tyreek Smith here.
This, we're getting in another combo area here, right? That it's like,
right.
Well, if, you know, Tyreek's definitely going, if Zach also goes and now you're losing those two, now you're really putting a lot on JT and Jack. And then who's the third guy? I mean, Tyler Friday coming back or if like JJB stays or whatever. Like so there's some more combo stuff here, but Tyreek is definitely out. He's a year older than Zach. He's battled through a lot of stuff. At some point you can't keep fighting off injuries for free. You got to go get paid while your body's working well, and his body is working right now, and he's playing football at a really high level. So we know he's gone, and I think this is a good pick. What do you think, Steven?
That's a really good sales pitch. Don't fight off injuries for free. Get paid millions of dollars to get hurt. Yeah. I get it. I respect that Tyreek's the one that got picked because he's been their best defensive lineman this year, at least from an eye test standpoint, even if the PFF numbers give it to Zach Harrison. I think – With Tyreek and Zach specifically, they're going to be bonuses. It's kind of like if they leave, okay, that's fine. JT and Jack will just be awesome. And if they come back, it's more of a, man, now you've got, you know, 3-5 stars that you're rotating through two spots. How awesome could that be? So if one is going to get picked, I agree that it should be Tyreek Smith getting picked.
Yeah, good pick. Steven, you're up. Who you got?
No.
It's getting a little less obvious. I don't know that there's any right or wrong pick here. Again, I sent out 13 to the Texters. This is pick 8. So
Haskell Garrett should be obvious here, but Talik Williams. So, like, they're fine.
And, like, Haskell Garrett hasn't played as much the last couple weeks and just with the combination of guys, have we felt like fine. It's been a huge absence?
I think this is better than, with all due respect to what Tommy Togiai and Haskell Garrett were in 2020 and getting that defensive line through the season, having six, being able to go three deep at both defensive tackle spots is always better in the interior. So, and they're able to do that this year, and all those guys are playing great. So I'm going to convince myself that it's Cameron Brown just until I see it with Jakalen Johnson and Jordan Hancock. Because when he and Denzel aren't on the – when Seven Banks is on the field, there's a weak link out there on the field. There's a side that a team can just attack.
That's who I was going to take, was Cam Brown.
Okay, cool.
So I think if you know that Denzel Burke's one of the starting corners next year and you don't know who the second starting outside corner is, but you assume it's one of these big time recruits who have not really even sniffed the field yet this year. Mm-hmm. You know, again, you have to believe in Ohio State's recruiting and development power, but it's going to be a heck of a thing to watch in April right? We're going to watch the battle, watch to see who develops. You assume somebody will. And actually, the corner play hasn't been so great. I mean, the corner play should be better next year. Frankly, I mean, whatever they're getting, one of those big-time recruits in year two should be better than what they have, but you don't know for sure. And almost, Nathan, when you were saying, like, this guy is definitely leaving, it's time for him to go, he's battled some injuries, but when he's been out there, he's been good. I actually thought you were talking about Cam Brown, because there's some part of Tyreek Smith and Cam Brown that are kind of similar, that, like, are they all Americans necessarily? No. Have they battled injuries? Yes. When they're on the field, do they help Ohio State? Yes. Do they have rotations at their positions? Yes. But are they at times looking like one of the best guys in that rotation? Yes. So I think there's some similarities there. And I think this, you know, Nathan, what do you think of this pick? I think it's a good one.
Yeah, I think it's a good pick too. I don't put Cam Brown in the same category as Tyreek Smith as far as like the top end of their impact quite the same way. He's been very steady though, and he's been an important part of this defense. I wonder with him if he needs to come back. And this is unfair to a guy, but like, you missed all of last year mostly because of an injury. You've been banged up at times this year. Can you come back and stay on the field a little bit more next year?
But he's walking, is he not? Isn't he doing senior day, Cam?
I believe he was on the list, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, again, it that doesn't guarantee anything, right? Because of the COVID year, everybody can come back. Like, there's no such thing. I mean, I guess the only guys who can't come back are like Thayer Munford, who already used the COVID year. But everybody else can come back. So nobody's guaranteed. But it feels like Cam Brown is probably gone. So I think you could pair up Seven Banks here if you wanted to. Again, it's another combo thing. Like, well, if one of those guys comes back, at least you'd have some veteran depth as you work on the younger guys. If they both leave, then you're definitely starting somebody new at outside corner, even though they're a big-time recruit. But I'll take Zach. I'll pair up the defensive ends instead. You know, that again, it's if we assume Tyreek is going, then if Zach also went, it's not that Jack and JT wouldn't be ready, but they have to be ready. And then, like, who's your third guy at a position where you'd like to rogue? Actually, that's like, not just throw out that question. Who is, if Zach and Tyreek both leave, Steven, who's the third defensive end next year? Or what does the rotation look like? Does it go, is it Tyler Friday back from injury? Is it JJB? Do they turn Craig Young into a defensive end? Is there somebody I'm not thinking of? Who else would it be?
Craig Young, a defensive end, would be fun. It's probably JJB is probably third. And then Tyler Friday works in there as well, because Javonte has been decent this year. He's had some good moments. And so if he's the rotating guy, I'm cool with it. That he's your Jonathan Cooper in 2019.
That could be. Nathan, what do you think? Like, again, they have two five stars who are going to be second year guys next year. And nobody else in the country has that. They have two top 10 recruits at the same position who are ready to start next year. So we can't lack. It's certainly not panic mode, but third would be not a superstar, probably, but be a good solid player. But I guess, is there anybody else besides JJB and Friday we're not saying?
I guess Jacoby Cowan has had some snaps here and there.
Noah Potter, who's been out.
He's on the interior now. They moved him. Right. They kicked him inside.
Unless they kick him back out, but he's been out with an eye thing. Although he just tweeted today on Wednesday that he had this eye surgery and the recovery is going well. So that's good news. But that's true. They did kick him in when they had a lot of guys, and if they need help on the outside, maybe they'd kick him out again.
So yeah, no, I think those are that nucleus of four, if both Smith and Harrison leaves, is the first four. And again, it's an interesting mix, because we know why Jean-Baptiste and Friday are useful players, but I don't think we see the same upside with them that we see with JTT and Sawyer right now as the third, fourth, fifth, whatever guys in that rotation. So I think that decision for Zach Harrison is a pretty huge one for what this defense looks like next year.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. When you start thinking about some of these guys in tandem, Nathan, we didn't pick Haskell Garrett. Like, is that a mistake? I mean, this guy was their returning All-American, is a captain, has been a good player, but is this just depth on the defensive line that we just think they'll be fine?
I think a big part of it is that we don't necessarily see a huge drop off to what they'll have coming back. I mean, We've liked what we've seen from Tyreek Williams. I think what Ty Hamilton has shown at times. You've also got someone like Teron Vincent, who is still kicking around. He's been starting the last couple games. He seems like a guy still on a trajectory to be back next year if he wants to be. So even just from a depth standpoint, I don't think they're going to get completely flushed out here. But part of this is also he hasn't necessarily had like a high-end impact that we were maybe expecting or thought he could have this year. But obviously these last couple weeks, that's been a little bit affected by whatever injury he's playing through.
I think there's a really good chance that Jerron Cage takes advantage of that 6 year.
That makes sense too.
He comes back. And if you're only using losing Haskell Garrett and Antoine Jackson from that six man interior guys, and then you're plugging in and then Tyreek Williams and Mike Hall just take over those snaps, I think you're fine.
According to PFF, the interior defensive snaps this year, Haskell Garrett leads at 338, Antoine Jackson second at 278, Teron Vincent third at 265, Ty Hamilton fourth at 193, Tyreek Williams fifth at 147, and Jerron Cage sixth at 138. The weekly snaps for Haskell Garrett: 47, 55, 54, 26 against Akron, 22 against Rutgers, 29 against Maryland, 20 against Indiana, back up to 45 against Penn State. But then the last 2 weeks, 12 against Nebraska, 28 against Purdue. So again, in the big games early in the year, 55 against Oregon. And then in a Nebraska game that was kind of a battle, he only played 12, and then Purdue 28. So again, it's...
I think maybe they've been trying to hold him back a little bit to have him in better shape for these next three, four games.
And if he single-handedly shuts down Kenneth Walker III, which like is not impossible, we might be like, what are we doing? He should have been the third pick. You know, like we overlooked like what the upside. I don't know that we have seen the upside of Haskell Garrett for a little bit. And last year there were times when it was like, oh, look, the only person who's getting any penetration on the defensive line is Haskell Garrett. Oh, cool. That was good. Like Haskell Garrett was in the backfield again. And it just hasn't felt that way. Although we had that great discussion, right? I mean, there were people asking about it in press conferences this year, the battle between the tackles and the ends and trying to get more sacks and more pressures or whatever. And early in the year, it was kind of like the tackles were doing the work. And then Tyreek Smith came back and now the ends have come on. And at the moment, Steven, it feels like we're on a little bit of an end run instead of a tackle run when we think about who's making the biggest difference on the defensive line.
Which is a reflection of the type of teams they've played. When they were playing Oregon and Minnesota, who like to run the ball, the interior guys are getting most of the statistics because that's how that works. When you start playing a bunch of teams like Tulsa and Purdue who want to throw the ball around, there's more opportunities for these defensive ends to just pin their ears back and not worry about setting the edge and just go off to the quarterback. So ideally here, Michigan State, Michigan, who have really good running back situations, maybe this is the opportunity where you see these defensive tackles, Haskell Garrett specifically, this is where you see an uptick in some of his production just because of it.
No, I think that all makes sense. Couple other guys who were on the list that didn't get picked. Seven Banks was 13th out of 13. Marcus Williamson was 12th. Thayer Munford didn't get picked. He was 7th. On our list, and Haskell Garrett didn't get picked. He was 4th. Thayer Munford, been a very good player for a long time, 4-year starter, but that's just a belief that they'll be fine inside, Nathan. Is that why we didn't pick him?
Well, and he's one of the guys I was mentioned before. Like when you know a guy absolutely has to leave, maybe you downgrade the impact of them leaving because it's not, you know what I mean? Like he's definitely leaving, and especially in his case, being a 6th-year guy. But I also think it is now that he's bumped inside. Like they have an abundance of interior offensive linemen next year, we think, that are all starting caliber. It's now he has been a tackle before, so I guess you could make the case that he could fill a tackle spot too if he were coming back, if some miracle happened where he was allowed to come back. But no, I think it's mostly that this move inside, when you project to next year, the need that he creates by leaving is lessened.
24 guys that Ohio State says are going to walk on senior day. 10 of them walk-ons who don't really play. Then Cam Brown, Master Teague, Mitch Rossi, Tyreek Smith, Nicholas Petit-Frere, Seven Banks, Bradley Robinson, the long snapper, Jeremy Ruckert, Marcus Williamson, Antoine Jackson, DeMario McCall, Haskell Garrett, Chris Olave, and Thayer Munford. No DeMario discussion on this podcast. It was funny. We were talking about this the other day, though. Nathan, where are you on this? In the preseason, I certainly poo-pooed the potential defensive impacts of both guys who were moving from offense to defense. One was DeMario McCall, one was Steel Chambers. I was like, well, it's Ohio State. Are you going to move, flip sides and be really important? And then, like, DeMario McCall, because they had all these injuries at quarterback, he played in the opener against Minnesota. And here we are now where DeMario McCall doesn't play defense anymore and Steel Chambers is their best linebacker. Was it obvious that Steel Chambers was the guy of those two who had the better chance to make an impact? Or was there a time when if you would have said, one of those two guys will be starting in November on defense, is there any point in the preseason where we would have picked McCall ahead of Chambers?
Well, as much as depth was an issue at linebacker, it certainly at one time seemed like it would be, especially talking about like preseason, because we didn't know Denzel Burke was going to start from day one. Right. I think that's what changed the math there. Once he became clearly their best cornerback and has established himself as such, then you now only need like two more guys. And that's what they've gotten to, right? Like go back to the Oregon game, probably even as recently as like the Tulsa game, where it still seemed like they didn't know exactly who was supposed to be playing. And now they've got a three-man rotation. It's a three-man rotation. And like Cavazos played a couple snaps in the last game, but McCall and Watts and like nobody else is really involved.
I'm not going to rule out. So Cam Brown and Denzel Burke are clearly their best two corners, right? I mean, it's not crazy to think that DeMario, just given what Steel Chambers is doing, is basically the best linebacker. It's not completely crazy to say DeMario McCall might have been their third best corner and been in the rotation, given what we saw with Legend Cavazos out there and Ryan Watts and what Seven Banks has been doing. It's crazy, but you know, look, we've seen crazier things this year. So looking back on it now, I would not have been shocked if DeMario McCall was the third best cornerback by this point.
Snaps, according to PFF, against Minnesota in the opener, Steel Chambers 9, DeMario McCall 15.
Yep.
So, and when we're looking at Steel Chambers, it was like, well, there's these three fourth-year linebackers who've been waiting their turn, and then two of them transferred, and by now Steel Chambers has taken the job from the one that's left. So, like, again, credit to Steel Chambers. Sometimes I think like, oh, did I underrate Steel Chambers? And it's like, well, I just thought it was going to be like more like DeMario McCall. And DeMario McCall doesn't play defense because why would he? Because he's an offensive player his whole life. Congrats to DeMario for doing what he's trying to do to help the team. But again, it's Ohio State trying to win a national championship. That's not usually how it works, which makes the Steel Chambers stuff even kind of more amazing. All right, let's run through our final picks in this draft. Pick number one was Jeremy Ruckert. That was sixth for the Texters. Pick number two was Ronnie Hickman. The Texters had him 8th. Pick 3 was DeJuan Jones. Texters had him 5th. Garrett Wilson was 4th. Texters had him 1st. Chris Olave was 5th. Texters had him 2nd. Nicholas Petit-Frere was 6th. Texters had him 3rd. Tyreek Smith was 7th. Texters had him 9th. Cam Brown was 8th. Texters had him 11th. And Zach Harrison was 9th. Texters had him 10th. The guys who we did not pick, Haskell Garrett at 4, Thayer Munford at 7, Marcus Williamson at 12, and Seven Banks at 13.
Is it worth mentioning Noah Ruggles at all?
So, like, Noah Ruggles said he might go to the NFL. Like, that's what – I mean, like
– Well, it's just – he's just in an eligibility situation, too. I mean, he has the year left, but he'll also be a guy who's been in college 4 years at this point. No, I just don't know where a guy's heart is.
Well, it's just like one of those things, not to downplay the Noah Ruggles thing, but A, they have Jake Seibert sitting around, right, who's still supposed to be the guy. And if Noah Ruggles leaves, you know who they're going to get? Some other Noah Ruggles. Other kicker from the ACC who lost his job. That, like, I mean, if that's – that guy's this good and he couldn't kick at North Carolina anymore? So I don't know. Who's Arizona State's backup kicker? He'll be there, Noah Ruggles, next year.
But it's probably worth mentioning. CJ Stroud will be in year two, we think. We'll see what happens with Quinn. But assuming CJ Stroud is in year two as the starting quarterback, I don't think he's going to have some of those early season struggles in the red zone where they're having to rely on their kicker. I think they're just going to score touchdowns.
They were later season struggles in the red zone, to be fair.
Okay, wait. Fair. Even I don't think I'll bank on them not having red zone struggles with a second year starting quarterback who might be, who's probably going to be the favorite for the Heisman next year.
But it is, I mean, I guess it's one of those things. If Noah Ruggles wasn't here, would Jake Seibert be banging a bunch of kicks off the uprights? I don't know. I mean, he'd probably be fine, but that is a credit. Noah Ruggles has done, has he missed one? He hasn't missed one yet, has he?
Nope.
No, I think he's so, 19 for 19.
I mean, like, you do your job every time. You don't want to assume that everybody else would have been just as good as you. So that was nice of you to mention Noah Ruggles at the end, but
that was nice.
Just sliding it in.
Just sliding it. Go find a kicker, Ryan Day.
Okay.
All right. Talk. We'll be back. Go find a kicker. Oh, well, yeah, we'll be back on the Friday pod. We're going to have Matt Wenzel from M Live to talk about Michigan State, break that down with us. We'll make our picks on that show. We'll update whatever Ryan Day had to say on Thursday. But for now, thanks to you guys for listening to the Thursday pod. For Stephen Means and Nathan Baird, I'm Doug Lee Maurice, and that was Buckeye Talk.